Hi, this is Jean Bruce Scott.
And Randy Reinholz.
And when we're not busily producing some of the most outstanding Native American theater in Los Angeles,
we always like to check out the best of British audio adventures with Alex Lefchuk and his team of the Midweek Drive.
And Midweek Drive morning editions on Siren FM.
And southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com.
It's almost the final summer special of programs produced for our usual Wednesday slot on the Midweek Drive. I say almost because it's never the end, really, because we'll be back live from Lincoln as well in the very near future. But good evening, Anna Lewis. How are you?
Very well, thank you. How are you?
Well, we're okay. I'm okay. I think I've had a summer cold and things. We have not just one, but two fabulous folk in the studio, neither of whom you've actually spoken to before. We welcome back, of course, for another Midweek Drive, the awesome Richard Bellis. How are you, Richard?
I'm good.
Excellent. Richard, of course, whose website on YouTube is the amazingly entitled...
Dwarven Lego.
Dwarven Lego. That's Dwarven Lego. I know, Lego for very, very teeny, tiny, small people. only kidding. And making her debut on the production from Askham Bryan College Marketing Officer, because she is the Askham Bryan College Marketing Officer, it's Lauren Watson. How are you, Lauren?
Hi, I'm very well, thank you.
Excellent, that's all we like to hear. So, Anna, where are you in Jersey at present?
Well, I shouldn't advertise, but I'm in Waterstones Bookshop in St Helier.
Oh,
I'm browsing because I need to find a friend a birthday present, and I think this is a sensible place to look.
I think that's perfect. It makes perfect sense, really, and you don't have to worry about sort of people going certain around saying shh. It's obviously in previous times we've actually reached us from a church in Jersey, from a WC in Jersey, in the library. It's been quite fascinating in its own sort of way. Let's just sort of set the scene a little bit more from that perspective, because Anna is a key historian as well. But let's find out, first of all, Richard, have you ever been to Jersey?
I've never been to Jersey, ever.
And Lauren, have you ever been to Jersey?
Unfortunately not, no.
Right, so clearly. But let's spin the thing around, because I don't think you've ever been to Teesside either, have you, Anna?
No, I haven't. Mm. I've very not travelled in the UK. I feel quite ignorant, really, when it comes to England.
Well,
I only went to Petersham last week, and I used to live across the river, as you well know, and I've never been to Petersham before in my life, and it was a learning curve.
Well, you know, again, it's important that you actually take the opportunity to go when the spirit moves you. Lauren, one of the reasons you're here today is because it's part of an ongoing series of things that we're working through with Askham Bryan College, but in particular something that's very exciting as far as Stuart Park is concerned. Share with Anna one of the reasons why she really should make every effort to come up to Teesside to see Stuart Park in particular, and to find out what Askham Bryan College are doing there.
Well, it's because of the renovation of the Central Lodge. So in Stuart Park, we used to have a Victorian manor. Unfortunately, that was demolished in the 1960s. But what remains is the Central Lodge, and that has a whole host of different rooms. It has a dairy, stables, and a laundry, and... Askham Bryan College got a bid from the Heritage Lottery Fund to renovate the Central Lodge, and that's where all of their lessons will be starting September.
Oh, that's fantastic. Good to know lottery money is being well spent.
Definitely.
That's quite good news. Excellent. Oh, good. Maybe I will make up a trip up there after all.
Well, we'll always welcome you over.
Exactly. It's in the northeast of the country and works marvellously. Just give us a bit more of the background about the manor house as well, Lauren, because again, it's gone through so many changes. I mean, it was set up originally by Henry Bolko, I believe.
It was, yes. So it's got Bolko is rooted in a lot of Middlesbrough's history. So he came over from Germany when he was 21 and he worked in the corn trade in Newcastle. But he met a man called John Vaughan, and they set up the Bolko and Vaughan Company, and they discovered iron ore in the Cleveland Hills, and that's actually what really revolutionised the iron and steel industry. So in many ways, Bolko is one of the founding fathers of the iron and steel industry on Teesside.
And indeed the town of Middlesbrough.
Definitely. So because of that, the population in Middlesbrough absolutely skyrocketed. And he becomes the first MP of Middlesbrough, and he's also one of the first mayors of Middlesbrough. So he creates his manor to welcome not only his industrial co-workers and colleagues, but also those of the political sphere. And you can see a lot of that in the Central Lodge. We found corbels in the coach house, so it's decorative pieces of plaster work, and they were all painted with gold leaf, and that's because he wanted to impress them from the minute they entered the estate.
He was German, let's face it.
Yeah.
I mean, I described him when we did a little wander around a few weeks ago, Lauren, as being a bit like the Roman Abramovich of his day, really, when he was actually out there doing his stuff.
Yes. And Francine's just joined us.
Yeah, exactly. Francine has actually arrived. She's travelled far and wide to come to represent the Stuart Park Educational Events area, of which she is Educational Events Officer at Stuart Park. She's travelled all the way from the far north of the British Isles. She was actually, Anna, in that place which we refer to as Annick, or home of Harry Potter these days, in terms of actually getting here. But Francine, as the microphone is placed in front of your good self there, welcome finally to the Southside Studio.
Oh, thank you very much. It's good to be here at last.
Exactly. And of course, welcome to the Siren Studio as well. Don't get me started on various other bits and pieces, because I know this is going out primarily for Lincoln's First Community Radio Station, as well as our friends on Southside Broadcasting at James Cook University Hospital as well. How was the Angel of the North, Francine?
She was looking very good when I passed her.
Splendid. We've just been sharing with Anna Lewis, who's one of our correspondents in Jersey, about the importance of Henry Bolko, and in particular what's going on as far as Stuart Park is concerned. And actually, I think you should already have words with Ask and Brian and make sure that Lauren is given a hefty 14% salary increase on the basis of what she's already delivered so far. So I just want to relay that to the system. Just give us your perspective in terms of how, you know, the park in itself and why Stuart Park is such an important thing. We're not trying to persuade Anna in Jersey why she should leave Jersey. She should leave Jersey for the summer. She should leave Petersham for the, should make it to Teesside.
Oh, I think Stuart Park is definitely a park for the people. It's a little bit wild at the edges.
We have wild animals wandering the grounds, actually, Anna.
I think a couple of llama and some goats, I think we're pretty safe. It's definitely a place to come and stay. It's beautiful open green space, lots of nice trees. We have a very good conifer collection. And it's just really lovely and peaceful, and it's a real privilege really to work there.
Yeah. And how many people actually work there then? You say work there, is it like an ongoing project and therefore staff are needed right now, or is it that it's long term? People have always worked there and will always work there, that kind of thing.
I think the key to get across, part of the project we're doing, is that there's always been people that have worked there, worked on the estate, and now it's mainly Ask and Brian College, but Middlesbrough Council, through the Parks Department and through the Museum Service, that are busy in the park.
Oh, that sounds good. And what sort of area does it cover in terms of square or miles? Or does it branch out? You know, what's the sort of size we're talking about?
Oh God! Right, this is where I've suddenly gone. Oh, I can't remember my acres. I think it is about 120 acres, it's pretty big. There's always a corner where you can go and find a bit of peace and quiet. That's what I like as well.
Lovely. I mean, one of the things that in Jersey, I live here, what used to be a car park that they've turned into a Millennium Park, because it's based in Millennium. But they've tried to have like a kind of biodiversity garden, which is special. But the problem is they run a little path through it, which children in pushchairs will find dangerous because there's lots of spiky plants in there. That's my only reservation. But you can make that sort of place so sacred in that sense. You can, you know, do so much with an open space that it's a lung, isn't it, really? It's a lung.
Yes, I think it's really important. And part of my job really is to teach the children about the spiky plants. We always know where the dock leaves are.
Oh, yes. Handy, very handy.
Very handy.
And so critical. I know, Anna, you haven't had a chance as yet to have a few words with Richard Bellis. You can if you wish, because clearly Francine will be waiting to avail herself of the cold tea that we've specifically and hopefully quite thoughtfully provided for you, Francine. So all's well from that sort of perspective. So we'll just swing the microphone around so that Richard's ready. Richard is ready to ask or basically deal with any questions you may have, including what was it like doing film and television Tourism Studies at the University of Teesside for one English year, and where are you considering to actually go now?
What?
I know. I was I thought Anna would actually have burst into that, but okay. Anna, over to you.
Well, that, you know, where do you see your future going in this sort of industry? Do you see a very vibrant future for it?
Ooh, I don't know. I mean,
be positive.
Yeah, I'm trying to be positive. I'm currently I've just finished first year film and TV production, but I'd like to go into broadcast journalism. I think journalism and especially radio journalism. I think that's the area I'd like to pursue.
Yeah, do you think you'll go abroad for a bit of experience, or do you think you're quite happy in the UK doing what you can in the UK? Challenging environments out there in the big wide world, that's what I'm just thinking.
Yeah, I've never actually thought about going abroad. I'm quite happy here in the UK, but I've always wanted to go to America.
Yeah. It's a difficult time for the States right now, isn't it? That would be very challenging.
Yes. Anna, just because Lauren and her partner were actually over there a few months ago doesn't necessarily mean to say that they're still recovering in the States. It's just a minor point. Two things are not connected. Although, on the other hand, we'll talk about that. Richard, can you remember those last two questions which we need to just bowl out to Anna Lewis at this stage in that fine bookstore which begins with a W and ends in an S in Jersey? Has she had a reasonably interesting telephonic chat?
Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic chat with us?
I have, and I will certainly look out for that park.
Yeah. And the Dwarven Lego.
Yes, the Dwarven Lego YouTube channel.
Yes, definitely. Brilliant, thank you.
And is she coming back again?
Are you coming back again?
Oh, I think so, yes, if you want me back. Also.
That's great.
Successful fella thought to himself, oops, I've got a lot of money caught in a rat race terminally. I'm a professional cynic, but my heart's not in it. I'm paying the price of living life at the limit. Caught in a centuries anxiety. Yes, it weighs on him. Lives in a house, very big house in the country. Watching after new repeats and the food he eats in the country. He takes a manner of pills and piles up on his bells in the country. Oh, it's like an animal farm, that's a rural charm in the country. He's got morning glory and life's a different story. Everything's going jack and jory. In touch with his own mortality. He's reading Balzac, looking bad. It's a helping hand that makes you feel wrong you're blind. Oh, it's a century's remedy. But the thing that haunts Star Trek simple. Lives in a house, a very big house in the country. He's got a bug in his chest, so he needs a lot of rest in the country. He doesn't drink, smoke, laugh, takes herbal baths in the country. This should come to no harm on the animal farm in the country. In the country. In the country. So.
very, very big house of the country. Kind of a Henry Volko song for the 21st century, or maybe that's just me. We'll find out more about that in a few moments. Also, a reminder, we'll be featuring another episode of Marauder. That's the play put together by D'Amelia and Penny and a whole heap of their friends across the Facebook pages of the world, really, linking Australia with America, with Britain, and more, of course. So that's going to be happening. But it is time to go up to Edinburgh once again to speak to the amazingly talented William Coles. How are you, William?
Very good shape, thank you. How are you?
We're very good indeed. We've just been finding out some fascinating information about the joys of Stuart Park in Middlesbrough. And not, it has to be said, I mean, Stuart Park, Francine, you might know the answer to this as Stuart Park Education Events Officer. Why was Stuart Park named Stuart Park?
Oh, I love this question.
I thought you might. Should I have actually channeled my inner child and said, Miss, why Stuart Park or Stuart Park?
It's fine, I'm used to this one. It's called Stuart Park, and it's not Stuart, Stuart.
Exactly, yeah.
After Councillor Dorman Stuart, who actually purchased the house and the parkland or estate for the people of Middlesbrough to turn it into a park.
Back in the day when Gladstone was referring to the town as the Infant Hercules.
I think it was a bit later, 1923.
All right, okay. Yeah. That's good for that. So actually, just around the time you were actually being born yourself, William, from that perspective. Only kidding, sorry, But again, giving things to do for the family, to step out of Edinburgh, etc. Have you ever, in your journalistic career, working for, obviously, News International, or indeed as a novelist, a tremendous thing, have you ever said, well, I've done Washington, I've done the Fleet Street, I've done the Wapping thing, I've done all those sort of areas, but Middlesbrough is really a patch I should be checking out?
I haven't checked it out, but I would like to check it out.
Oh, yeah.
Well, go, Fran. This is your chance to start.
What's the biggest attraction that Middlesbrough
I definitely
has
think
to
you should come and see Middlesbrough. People forget about us, but also we're very keep it a bit shh because we have
like Lincoln, only not quite as fancy at times.
We have an industrial path, but we also have great coastline. The River Tees, and we also have the Moorland and the Dales not too far away as well. So Middlesbrough itself is very much the infant Hercules, as mentioned. but it is a town on the up, I would say. With lots of green spaces, ambitions, good galleries and museums, great university as well.
We heart Middlesbrough.
Yeah.
Clearly, when it comes to universities, I've got to say I heart Lincoln, and I wouldn't even expect anything else really from that point of view. But you know, I'm sure Richard would say I heart Teesside if pushed.
If pushed.
There we are. You see, so nice stuff there. Over to yourself, Lauren. I mean, as a citizen of Redcar. Which again, I suspect. Actually, no, William. I think last week we speak about Redcar last week with you. Then
yes, we did speak about Redcar.
Yeah, fine. So Lauren is one of Redcar's finest ambassadors. Talk us through your own background, because this is going to be, I think, the possibilities for William to start putting his interrogation hat on here in terms of tell us how you came from Redcar to the University of Sunderland to become marketing officer at Askham Bryan College. At Stuart Park.
Well, I didn't really want to go to Teesside purely because I thought it was a little bit too close to home. I wanted to move out and be a little bit further away, be a bit more independent.
20 miles is a long way to go, Lauren.
But I didn't want to go too far because I still needed my washing done on the weekends, of course. So I came back most weekends, and then once I graduated, I got a job at the university, decided that wasn't really for me and that marketing was something I really wanted to go down. Saw this job come up. I actually found it on the Teesside Uni website and applied for it and thought it was perfect to come back home, save up a little bit of money and develop my CV, and it's just such a fantastic role for that. The amount of things I've been exposed to and the skills that I'm developing, I think, is putting me in a good stead for when I leave.
In fact, William, it's thanks to Lauren sending an email to myself at, in my capacity as the station manager programmer from this point of view, that actually, you know, Francine's here and Lauren's here, and that we're sort of, you're having the opportunity to speak to both Francine and Lauren.
Well, you've been properly schmoozed. is marketing still largely about, you know, taking people like Alex and Hacks out for for drinks in the bars and that sort of thing.
Well, I've not really done that, to be honest. I think probably it is more emails these days and maybe arranging for a cup of tea after the email, but I definitely think that the digital side is on the up and it's just a lot easier to kind of send a quick email, organise a calendar event that way. But I think that it's important not to forget about the face-to-face side as well. You know, it's easy to contact someone over an email, but it's still nice to meet up in the cafe for a cup of tea every now and then.
Why do you keep on talking about a cup of tea? I thought alcohol was what Jen wanted.
I don't know if that's against company policy.
It's the budget, you see, doesn't it? That's the challenge that we're faced with on that side of things. Fran, what about your own particular life story in terms of becoming Stewart Park Education Events Officer and indeed serving under one of our fine friends, Phil Filer?
Oh, right. Oh, gosh, yes. Yeah. He indeed
has sat in that very chair, and he sat in the same chair that Richard sat in as well when he sat in this particular studio in times past.
Oh, right. My pal, Phil.
Well, there we are.
Gosh, right. My family are all from Middlesbrough. My father was actually in the Navy, so I was actually born in Hong Kong. Did a little bit of travelling, ended up in Plymouth, and then eventually went to university at King Alfred's College in Winchester, and then came back up here, kind of needed my washing doing a bit like Lauren, and decided to stay. And ended up doing some volunteer work for the Dorm Museum, so I worked for them for a while, did some youth work, and then decided to go back and do a museum, art gallery museum studies at Manchester, then kind of came back, met my other half, and then stayed. And I've been working in the parks department as an education officer for about 17 years.
17 years? That's almost as long as Richard's been on the planet.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Yeah, it's, there we are. But time, it just sort of evaporates. So there you have it, William. You've got the brief descriptors there from Lauren, from Francine, and of course there's always Richard and a dwarven Lego, which you can pursue again with a vengeance, if you so choose. Who do you want to speak to?
Francine, the about Middlesbrough.
Oh, sorry, I've just lost you.
Oh,
Middlesbrough. You know that Middlesbrough is the journalist nightmare because no one knows how to spell it.
Oh gosh, yeah, because we're a bruff, not a borough.
Yes. Exactly. It's a tricky one.
Oh, definitely.
Come on, Borough is Peterborough, as in Peterborough. Mm-hmm. The football side is the Borough, as in
come on, Borough.
But the town, Middlesbrough.
Yeah, Middlesbrough. Definitely. And if you get it wrong, people
It's like saying Edinburgh, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
You know, for goodness sakes.
The same controversy is over the Teesside when people only put one S.
Oh, yeah.
One F's in Teesside just as ignorance and rude.
Well, but the side of the T's is how you have to remember it.
Exactly. The side of the T's, hence Teesside. Teesside. I could at this particular stage, William, go into a little bit of choral speaking with the team and we can actually say, we are Teesiders. But perhaps, perhaps not, because Richard's not the biggest football fan, and, you know, I thought, well, they didn't do Fly With Us to the Moon today, so maybe I'll work on that one, you know, we are Teesside, and equally, you're going home in a Teesside ambulance is also a chant that you wouldn't necessarily want to sort of adhere to, even wherever the station studios happen to be.
I didn't know you were a fan of football chants.
Oh, yeah. I always like to keep a few surprises for our connections, William, otherwise where would we go? Let's face it, you know, always got to keep something special, really. Whom do you wish to go to now, William?
Yes, can we just get back to the business of PR and sending out these emails and it being a really good way to connect? I get, I reckon, about 20 to 25 emails a day from PRs, and they all go straight into my spam thing. I'm not interested in getting people's emails. They've got to, you know, there's got to be a contact face-to-face, and then if they send me an email and I've met them, then it might cut some ice. But just random emails from
What won me over, before Lauren actually had a chance to write a reply on this, what won me over was she sent me a photograph of her toilet. I thought to myself, well, you know, okay, it's unusual,
let's say if she wants to talk about this live on air, let's do a feature, let's celebrate this whole thing, etc.
Well, I would like to point out it's not my toilet. It's so part of the renovation of the Central Lodge, obviously we're having to put toilets in for the students and the staff, but what's
you
nice
see civilization hits Teesside,
yes, exactly.
It was going to happen finally after all these years. Staff get indoor loos.
I know,
it's genius.
Flush,
yeah. Hand washing everything. So the interesting thing is obviously there's so much history in the building is that anyway you put toilets is going to have it, the room was going to have a history before that, so we've got toilets that were stables, yeah. Toilets that were loose boxes, and you can still see remnants of them, so the wrought iron divider that would have divided the horses is that'll be in the men's toilet.
Oh, we've got lovely tiles.
Yes, lovely tiles as
oh,
well.
But they can't see them. They covered them up over.
Yes, they've protected them from the men's toilets.
Right, so
and they'll leave
them. Let's face it, you do not want to risk splashback in any way, shape or form. This is a nightmare scenario. So, you know, it would be a health and safety hazard and the council would be shutting us down before we knew where we were.
Yeah.
Sorry, William, carry on.
By sending this picture of a toilet, did Lauren know that you were a toilet fetishist?
I have to refute that.
She sucked you out beforehand.
I mean, listen, when you've got an online persona and presence, who knows what research could have actually happened. I think it was a blanket press statement that you sent to a whole range of folk, and we just happened to sort of say, this is quite interesting, you're not too far away from the studio, let's do a piece with it.
Yeah, that's exactly how it happened.
Very good. So how many emails do you get from PRs then, actually? You're getting hundreds.
Actually, we're probably in the sort of... today I've worked through about 30 or 40, actually, so it's been relatively mild, which we've kind of said yes to about three or four of them and just ignore the others, but you know, that's right. It happens, you know, that's what happens when you're jointly doing the whole sort of package, etc. Returning briefly again to Francine... Stuart Park, as we said, in terms of the history and the animals that you've actually got there, etc. I mean, it really is a jewel in the crown that people don't realise in Teesside that we have. I mean, Albert Park is the one that I sort of was very fond of, etc. That's a great sort of patch, but Stuart Park equally.
Oh yeah, I think we're quite rich in green spaces, but yeah. Particularly I would have said probably Stuart Park and Albert Park are the crown jewels, basically. Mm. I think they're both well-loved parks and held dear to the locals' hearts, but we're also very welcoming. We do like outsiders. Mm. And obviously with Stuart Park, you've got to remember, there's the Cook connection.
This is it. Now, yeah. Now, William, James Cook was a man who basically had a midlife crisis, loved Middlesbrough so much he decided to leave and seek out Australia, as well as lots of other parts of the world as well.
Oh, yeah.
Let's face it. It's working
he celebrated in Middlesbrough too, because I was just hearing my brother-in-law was telling me how he's also celebrated in Whitby.
Oh. Well, yes. Ooh, ooh. It's true, though. It wasn't a vampire. And we are covering the Music Port Festival at Whitby later in the year, which mentions James Cook. But yes, we've got the James Cook University Hospital. Strange that we should mention that particular thing, as we're sitting right in the middle of it at present. yes, he was born, actually, Grade 8, just up the road, really, from where we are.
No.
Go on, then. You're the historian.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yes.
I really do have to put you straight on this, Alex. He was actually born in Marton in Middlesbrough. Okay? So it's the Captain Cook Birthplace Museum. Hmm. That says it all, really.
So Grade 8, basically, just was that some sort of... He lived there for a time?
Look, we're going to acknowledge that he did live there.
Yeah.
There's a schoolroom where he went to school.
Yeah.
But
there is also a very impressive totem pole that's right outside the James Cook Museum in the James Cook Cafe at the Stuart Park environment.
Yes.
I feel as though we've covered the Edinburgh Fringe so perfectly. It's been wonderful. Would you like to share with William the tale of your friend who suddenly turned up at the Edinburgh Fringe without even letting you know that she quit her job?
Oh, yes. She'd probably kill me if she hears this. But yes, she's debating going back and doing a master's in September, wasn't enjoying her current job, so she thought, do you know what, I don't want to do this anymore. So she handed a notice in and said, that's fine, you can leave on Tuesday. So she did, and hopped on the next train to Edinburgh Fringe.
And we'll find out more about what's happening in the Edinburgh Fringe from William if he's kind of to stick around for a few moments after history in One Direction. Okay?
Okay.
You gotta help me, I'm losing my mind. Keep getting the feeling you wanna leave this all behind. Thought we were going strong,
I thought we were holding on, aren't we? No, they don't teach ya this in school. Now my heart's breaking and I don't know what to do. Thought we were going strong, thought we were holding on, aren't we? Strong, thought we were holding on, aren't we?
Stop swaying your shoulders back and forth now and giving the anthemic sign. You mentioned One Direction, William, and suddenly it's as though it's just craziness has broken out of the studio.
Anyway, have you managed to collect yourself together there? What little highlights from the Edinburgh Fringe, as it sort of wraps up, would you like to share with us today?
Requiem for Aleppo. A mate of mine, he took quite a punt a few months ago, and he booked out one of the bigger venues for 1,200 people, and he got Sadler's Wells to bring up their show from London, which is about just over an hour, and he started banging the drum, and he got he was wondering whether he was going to be able to fill it, but he pretty much filled it, raising money for Aleppo. And it was all pretty harrowing. They had these pictures of Aleppo, and it's just a complete wasteland. The place is being flattened. There's nothing left. So that has been my highlight of the week so far.
The original music is a combination of Requiem Mass lyrics set to choral music, so it'll actually fit in quite nicely with our feature with Scott Harrison of the Los Angeles Chamber Orchestra. Sorry about their 50th anniversary series. Emotionally overwhelming, or did you sort of think, well, I don't know, are you too cynical for that these days, William?
So kind of a bit of halfway house between overwhelming and cynicism.
Yeah, well, it's billed as dance, physical theatre, and circus, which is quite interesting.
I don't know about the circus. They had they had 12 of them, ballet dancers, and always you've got one person in the spotlight who is running on the spot. And then the other people are doing whatever they're doing, dancing around, but you've got this person panting away. And I wanted to go over to the choreographer at the end and say, what is happening? Why do they suddenly all put on skirts halfway through? What is that about? But anyway, unfortunately, we had to make up our own minds as to why they were all putting on skirts.
I think, interestingly enough, if you're under 2 years of age, you don't have to have a ticket. It does actually say that babies in arms policy, babies do not require a ticket. Policy applies to children under 2 years.
Right, so I didn't see many 2-year-olds there, but yeah, that was nice of them to put that.
Very critical. If you were average sort of, you know, 1.5-year-old, you might be thinking they're getting a bit past it now, and they're sort of, you know, they've already spent 18 months on the planet. You know, they might sort of think, at least I can look forward to having a free sort of trip to Requiem to Aleppo from that point of view. Requiem for Aleppo, indeed. Francine, ever been to the Edinburgh Fringe?
No, actually, I haven't. When I was at college, I did history and drama, and my roomie, she went to the Fringe, right. And I was very jealous.
Did she flounce back when she returned? Was it a case of?
I think she really enjoyed it. It was really, really good. So yeah, she had a good time.
And Richard, Fringe, does it appeal to your good self, or is it a case of Scotland? What could they say about culture in there?
Well, no.
Sorry, Scotland. Sorry.
I wouldn't mind going to the Fringe. I've never been, but it's on my to-do list.
Okay. Lauren?
Maybe next year.
We're always saying that, maybe next year. It'll happen. Anything else, William, that you'd like to sort of draw our attention to? I noticed you'd actually decided to nail your colours to the mask and have gone for a tsunami tale for your book of the year so far.
Oh, yes. Well, you have to do that sort of thing for my brother-in-law. I mean, I haven't actually read it, but yeah. If he's got a book out, I've got to plug it just for cozy familial relations. Also up at the Fringe, we've got a ton of politicians all touting their books at the book festival. And Alex Salmond, who lost his seat at the general election, he's got nothing to do. So he's got this, he's got a whole show every single day for the entire month. God. And with his rather peculiar joke, which he launched it with, that he was vilified for and has now dropped it, thankfully.
Well, what can one say about Alex Salmond, really? That's about it. Moving on to a different one. Sometimes silence is all you actually need. A reminder that if you are looking for that title for the book that we were sort of ruminating on and you don't want to actually go to Bill Cole's Facebook site, it's called Ghosts of the Tsunami, Death and Life in Japan's Disaster Zone. And it's by whom, William?
Richard Lloyd Parry. It's a cracking tale. He's been in, he's the Times Asia editor in Japan, and he's spent the last 3 or 4 years talking to survivors of the tsunami. And there was one very harrowing tale, which is the sort of spine of the story, about a school which was a few miles from a river, and they were all these school kids. They knew the tsunami was coming, and they were all standing out in the schoolyard. And the headmaster wasn't there, and the deputy was dithering. And what they didn't expect was that a forest would get washed away, and the forest got swept onto a bridge, which acted as a dam, and the whole school got wiped out. And so this is the core of the story, and Richard has spent the few survivors from that, and a lot of the parents he's been talking to. It's sort of the Japanese equivalent of ABBA fan.
Mm, new Welsh mining disaster. Again, strong and harsh material. Don't forget you can also go to williamcoles.com for all manner of wonderful things. And in fact, I will say, Lauren, if you're ever looking for some inspirational reads, then for a mere 99 English pennies, you can get two. Well, you can actually get one book. You can get for 2 times 99 English pennies, you can get 2 fabulous books. Richard, would you like to say what those inspirational books are that are actually online, and that one of which you say was actually inspired by myself, though I don't know which one you mean. What are their titles, Richard? William. What are their titles, William? I realise. Yes, you're quite right.
Oh, sorry.
Get the name right. It's been a long day. It's been a long week.
The Princess in the Golden Cage, and this was the one that was inspired by you, The Geek Who Learned to Charm.
They both sound really good. I'll have to check
them
out.
Well, there we are. It's recommended reading for these summer halcyon days. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic chat with us on the programme today, William Coles?
I've had a wonderful chat. Thank you so much for asking.
Well, I figure that after we've kind of demonstrated you coming to Lincoln, being to Lincoln, experiencing the Lincoln scenario, we might as well say, let's go halfway house. Let's go to a place which, you know, is halfway between Edinburgh and Lincoln. That, of course, is Middlesbrough. Teesside, spelled correctly in its fullest way. Brough. Will you be back again soon?
I'd love to come back.
Definitely one of those days. Well, as promised, and in the background, fading up even as we speak, another fascinating adventure from the Marauder team. This is episode 3, which goes even more peculiarly into waters that previously have actually been unsailed.
Thank you. Batman?
Not here. Lesson one. You don't blurt. Act dumb and quiet like you're a doubloon short of a treasure. Never know who might double-cross you. Look in the office. No need to shut the door. But talk quiet. Now what did you find out? Spit it out.
I did good, Captain. Just what you told me to do. I looked all over, top and bottom. I didn't have to say a word. It was all quiet, except for one man snoring in the galley. But he didn't wake or see me. He looked dead, except for the noise coming from his nose. He was using the bread dough for a pillow. Pretty smart, I thought.
Yeah, until someone's eating the bread, pulling hairs out of it, or dribble. Good work, laddie. Go get some rest. But just for a while. We've got things to do later. Blunt! Are you still here? Working with your ears pricked up.
I ain't listening to nothing. Just waiting and watching the clock and enjoying the music the Italian and skateboarder play. Putting on quite a show they are. You do realize it's almost 0:30. Didn't you say we were leaving at 0:30 and for all to be here at 30?
Stop tongue-twisting me. Well, good to see you alert, because of Knox ain't. And he's not what you would call too bright. Though he thinks he is. His kid was just about burned out. Take his hat off, and he's flat across the ears. Here. Take this list of crewmen, and start getting them together ready to leave. And tell them no more rum. I want them wide awake. Willing and able. Got it?
Yeah, I got it. No need for double checking me. You can check under my hat and soon you'll see my head's extra large. My brain space is working like a chain pulling in an anchor, chugging full alert. So you know, yeah, I read. Give me that list. Avast! Avast! Listen up. Get over here, you lot.
Done. Can I go? My mother's ever so ill, and I need to get home and check on her. low with the fever, sniffles and aches, she is.
Oh, yes, go, Lottie. You must take care of her. She's not young. Take her some soup. It might help. I'm just getting Streety some soup. Sit down, Streety. Look at you, shivering with the cold. You'll be next to get ill. I don't know what chance it was thinking, sending you out in the cold air.
Yeah, men. Nah, look at the time. She'll be sleeping. I'll get some soup tomorrow. Or next year. I'm off. Ta-ra. Bammy's easily fooled. Bugger me, mother. I'm getting down to the dock before the others see me. Word's out. Clubfoot's Clipper. Thank you, Snuffy Attic. You've got a big mouth. Nothing secret with you. I'm heading off on the journey whether they like it or not. I'll just hide and they won't know until we're way out to sea. Too late then. Nothing they can do then. Except feed me to the sharks. Here it is. Nice and close. Glad I bought a shawl. Bit chilly in the sea breeze. Quietly does it, Mushy. Now, where to hide? That'll do. That canvas over there. And it'll keep me warm. I'll just stay nice and quiet. Stick that in your pipe holes, boys. It'll fire you up good and proper.
Make sure they're all here, Crane. I gotta talk to Fanny before we leave. Tell Scapegoat I'll squeeze his music machine till it's flat if he doesn't stop it. Who's playing the cat's tail? Screeching damn fiddle. No wonder I'm turning into a madman. Between him and that Italian, my brain's hurting like cockroaches are running wild through it, sending me crazy. Aye. Looks like Clubfoot's bitten the dust. Write him a note, Crane. Tell him his ship's on loan and will be returned when we're finished with it. Get Flash to put the note in Clubfoot's pocket. Clubby could get someone to read it later. Much later, when he wakes and finds someone who can read. He don't read. In fact, he don't do nothing much at all. Fanny, where are you?
I'm here, in the kitchen with Streety, trying to warm him up. What is it? The poor boy is frozen. I don't know what you were thinking, sending him out in the cold air. When are you going to stop these crazy, stupid, madman ideas of yours? Time you settle down. One can only tolerate so much transit.
Well, I ain't settling yet. That treasure's waiting, and I intend to find it one way or another. And just so you know, I'm taking the kid with me. It'll make a man of him. You're turning him into a pussy with all your fussing. It ain't no good for the kid.
But Transit, he's only a baby. Don't do it. Let him be a boy. You are steering my angel to explosion. Start showing some sense.
Come on, kid. We gotta go now.
I wanna go, Mama. Please. Please let me go.
You called me Mama. Oh, Streety. You're only a boy, not a big boy old enough for this madness. But what can I do? Nothing. Nothing at all. If anything happens to Streety, I will never forgive you, Transit. Bring him home safe to me. Come here, Streety. Yuke, Nasser, be careful. I will be waiting for you to come home. Don't be gone too long. I'll miss you. I'm warning you, Transit. If anything happens or goes wrong, my final word, I say nothing more.
Stop fussing. Get your hat and coat, kid, and wait with the others. Time to move. Settle down, Fanny. We'll be back. Now get over here and give me a kiss.
I don't like it. Go on, then, but only one kiss. Don't forget what I said.
Okay. Gather around, you lot. Are you all here? Someone get up Knox. He looks legless. Throw some cold water on him and hold him up, useless sod. Now, who's missing? Anyone? Let me check the list.
Aye. Come on, you lot. We're off. Wait a minute. I'm getting that gigolo. He's coming whether he likes it or not. Close the lid on that music maker now! And get up, Italian. You're coming with us.
Hey, do silence before I broke your face. I'm not say, I play.
You took the words out of me mouth, and that's the problem. You ain't playing with Fanny. Get up! Shut the damn lid, or I'll shut it for you and break every playing finger. Get up! And get out with the others. Now!
Lucky you ain't got much English, or you'd be sulking a captain in brine to be fed to the heathens. Rather a tasty thought, though. Come on, matey, you'll be all right. Groper will look after you. Who knows? We might be playing a jig or two on board. Saying that, maybe not. We'll just have to wait and see. Come on. I wonder if there's a piano on board. Suppose we'll find out soon. What's wrong? Cat got your tongue? In a bit of a shock, are you? Lost for words, perhaps? Come on, come on. One foot in front of the other. Can you walk? Hurry up.
Who knows? But we may squeeze in an episode 4 before the end of the summer holidays. Hey, we're actually just saying very briefly, Fran, how strange it was that kept all the O'Hara things going.
O'Hara!
Start showing some sense! Thank you, Marauder team. We'll be back with you again, I'm sure, in the not-too-distant future. Coming up next from the Los Angeles Chamber Orchestra, Chief Executive Officer Scott Harrison with news of the 50th anniversary season.